Did you hear the news? Metro PCS is now Metro by T-Mobile. Now you get new plans with unlimited high-speed data all month long. All on the T-Mobile network. Check out the new Metro by T-Mobile today and discover the smarter way to get unlimited. Metro by T-Mobile. That's genius. During congestion, the fraction of customers using greater than 35 gigs per month may notice reduced speeds. And Metro customers may notice reduced speeds versus some T-Mobile customers. Video streams at 480p. Coverage not available in some areas. See store for details and terms and conditions.
Warning. This show contains adult political themes and language. Liberals and little children should cover their ears.
Welcome to Liberty Never Sleeps, where negativity never sounded so good. Now here's your host, Thomas Purcell.
Good morning and welcome to Liberty Never Sleeps. Make sure to follow the show at our website at libertyneversleeps.com. Be sure to follow our Twitter feed at Real Liberty Tom and join us on Facebook at Real Liberty Never Sleeps on facebook.com. Good morning, Monday morning. Wet, rainy morning here in Arizona. We've been having a lot of rains lately. It's kind of nice because it's bringing out all the flowers early, and it's bringing an early winter to Arizona, as I predicted. See, my predictions aren't scientific, by the way. It's not because I have some sort of magic witch doctor sense. It's because I pay attention to the Farmer's Almanac, by the way. If you want accurate weather predictions, don't go to the Weather Channel. Just pick up a Farmer's Almanac. It's always accurate. I don't know how they do it. Maybe they got witch doctors working for them. Anyway, we've got a lot to talk about. Got to talk about Jamal Khashoggi. We got to talk about the 60 Minutes interview. And we've got to talk about this growing fear that Americans are going into another civil war. I got to put that to rest because that's a conspiracy theorist thing. And I'm going to talk about why we aren't and explain it to you. But first, I want to talk about this Jamal Khashoggi thing, who was supposedly a Saudi journalist. He was a journalist working for the Washington Post, and he was a U.S. resident. He was not a U.S. citizen, despite what you've been told. He was a citizen of Saudi Arabia. He walked into a Turkish embassy, a consulate in Istanbul, a Saudi consulate. And this was in, as I said, Istanbul. And he didn't walk out. At least that's the story. And the accusation is that the Saudis may have killed him or cut him up or all kinds of horrible things. And a number of intelligence services, including the Turkish intelligence service, CIA, etc., are looking into it and find out what exactly happened to Mr. Khashoggi. I got to tell you, there's more here to the story. Now, I've only been studying it in a cursory manner, and I have only followed it because senators and congressmen are now saying that they're going to impose sanctions on Saudi Arabia and disrupting world economic markets. So it's become a story. But let's talk about Jamal Khashoggi. First of all, he's not really a journalist. Yes, he worked for the Washington Post. Yes, he did stories. But what he would do is post one attack piece after another about Israel and about Saudi Arabia and how awful Saudi Arabia is and Wahhabism. Wahhabism is a more moderate form of Saudi Arabian Muslim religious beliefs or integration with politics. I would advise you to look it up. I don't have time to go into it today, but he was a critic of it. He was a critic of a more moderate, westernized Saudi Arabia, and he was a critic of the current royal family that's running things, who have tried to moderate the hard-nosed Islamic Sharia law. He's also been a staunch supporter of the Palestinian cause. He causes the Israelis occupiers, and he's been a vocal critic of President Trump. What goes on around the world with a lot of these activists, a lot of these agitators, is that they write for a column or for a paper or a newspaper and claim that they are journalists. Now, it's up to you to decide whether he's a journalist or not. I'm not saying he is or he isn't, but I can tell you this is a common thing among activists around the world, or agitators, I should say. He was an agitator. They even said, his Wikipedia page itself says that he was the de facto head of the Muslim Brotherhood in Saudi Arabia. So he's no friend to peaceful relations and westernization of Arabic cultures. The Muslim Brotherhood is a violent organization. They claim they aren't. But I got to tell you, these people were behind the assassination of Anwar Sadat, are actively involved in the Palestinian cause, are contributing to a lot of friction between the West and Arabic culture, Arabic nations. It's up to you to decide whether the Muslim Brotherhood is a good thing or a bad thing. I'm not going to label them a terrorist organization. Some people have. But they certainly have stand opposed in a variety of issues to the West, to the United States, to Saudi Arabia, and to Israel. As for Mr. Khashoggi himself, whether he's a social activist or not, or whether he's a reporter or not, is not relevant to me. You have to have some expectation of civility. What I don't understand, and that's what we're going to talk about today, civility, incivility, that sort of thing. What I don't understand is why he would walk into a Saudi consulate in Istanbul. He must have known that his life would be at risk. There was a reason why he was living here in the United States. He was living here in the United States because he was a wanted man in the Middle East. And he knew his life was forfeit for a variety of reasons. As I said, he stood opposed to the Saudi king. He was an activist. He was an agitator. He was a member of the Muslim Brotherhood. And why would you want, when you know this, when you have to flee the country that you're a citizen of, you know you're wanted by an Islamic regime, which means his life would be forfeit. Why would you walk into a consulate? I'm not saying that he shouldn't have. I'm not saying that he didn't have a right to. I'm arguing a question, and it's something you should be asking yourself. What happened that would encourage him to feel that he was safe in that Saudi embassy? He walked in and he didn't walk out. I don't know what happened to him. Intelligence services are looking into it. But my question is this. Why? Why would you walk in? What was the purported meeting going to be about? About him repatriating himself to Saudi Arabia? About a possible deal for the reason he was wanted? I don't know. But he didn't walk out of that consulate. And I believe he expected to. He had his fiancée work out in the car. She was waiting for him, so he must have been told it was a short meeting. There must have been some reason. I don't know what. That's where the real investigation has to look into. Not just whether he disappeared in there, not whether the Saudis killed him or not, not what happened to him, not what is on his smartwatch. Why would he think that going into that consulate was of benefit to him? Why did he think that his life was safe? I just don't want you to think, the way they're painting it, was that, this is the Saudis acting outside law and doing something that was an atrocity, attacking a journalist and murdering a journalist. What they did was they got rid of a problem. And intelligence services worldwide, from many nations, sometimes resort to assassination and murder to get their accomplishment. I'm not defending it. I'm not justifying it. I'm just telling you, look at it for what it is. It's the Saudis getting rid of a serious problem that they had in their own country. Because this guy was, as I said, a member of the Muslim Brotherhood. That's on his Wikipedia page. That's not revealing anything. And he was a harsh critic of the Saudi Arabian kingdom. And that's a problem in Arabs and in Islamic in the world. Because what happens is when you have agitation there, it's a little different than you have agitation. Here you have agitation, you have purple-haired women banging on the doors of the Supreme Court. In Saudi Arabia, you have revolutions, okay? And so they were dealing with a problem as they saw it. Just look at things from a factual point of view. That's all I ask my listeners. And I'm following this story. I want to know what's going on. And I find it highly interesting that shortly after this event, or while this event was happening, they were releasing that prisoner over in Istanbul that Turkey had held and blaming him for crimes. And then suddenly he gets released. I don't know what's going on. I think that they're somehow connected. I don't know what the connection may be. I just find it odd that this accusation against Saudi Arabia would happen at the very time that we're releasing a pastor that nobody thought would get out. And he was accused of proselytizing in Christianity in Turkey, which is a crime. Several witnesses against him. All of a sudden, the witnesses don't want to testify. They don't want to talk. And this guy gets released, and the Khashoggi ends up dead or disappeared in a Saudi consulate. So I question it. I want to talk about that, about the growing incivility, whether it's really incivility. People are saying, oh, Tom, we're going to go to another civil war. Don't count on it. Because we don't fight wars anymore with bombs and missiles and planes, except in a third world country, except by proxy. We don't fight that in a civilized country. We're not going to let our country look like another Syria and Damascus. What we do is fight wars with laws, legal code, and lawyers. And I'm going to talk about that today. And we fight wars with what? Journalists, narrative, marketing, advertising, elections. We're going to talk about that today. I'm going to start with the Leslie Stahl interview on 60 Minutes, which was a ridiculous interview. I don't know why Donald Trump would do that. Why Donald Trump would go on 60 Minutes, which is a waste of his time and America's time. Because all he got was arguments, interruptions, and questions which really are irrelevant. Let's take a break, and we're going to talk about it today. We'll be right back. It's the three long years to still want me. If I don't see a river around the old road tree, I'll stay on the bus, forget about us. Gifts of all sizes help to ensure that Liberty Never Sleeps remains a relevant, vital resource across our nation. More than 70% of the funding for Liberty Never Sleeps comes from our listeners through the generosity of membership support by donating at patreon.com. Join our Insiders Club for $10 a month and gain access to private shows and editorial columns. Go to libertyneversleeps.com and click on the Donate Now button at the top of the page or on the button at our Facebook site. Thank you for your continued support. And we're back. Leslie Stahl. Leslie Stahl has to be the dumbest fucking journalist on TV. Has to be. Every time I see her do an interview, it's nothing but talking points. It's nothing but shallow, non-intellectual, dim-witted questions. And there she is sitting in front of President Trump. Why he interviewed with Leslie Stahl, I have no idea. Why he would interview on 60 Minutes, I have no idea. But especially Leslie Stahl. Leslie Stahl does nothing but say dumb things constantly. Constantly talk about dumb talking points, doesn't understand the context of the question she's even asking herself. She's sitting in front of the president and starts to go into global warming, right? Okay, ask questions. Well, do you believe in global warming? First of all, it's not a question of whether the president or the United States believes in it or not. Question is, what are his policies? That's the question you ask. You don't ask, well, do you believe in global warming? But what about the scientists? She constantly interrupted. During the 20-minute interview that I watched, it was almost unwatchable. Every question that she put to the president, within 30 seconds, she's interrupting him. But what about this? But what about that? She's not doing an interview. She's conducting a debate. And that's not what a journalist should do. Certainly not on 60 Minutes. You're supposed to ask the question, let him respond, and then you ask significant pointed questions depending on his response. His response was very simple. Well, I don't think that it's man-made, and I think that it's been going on for some time, and there's some debate about that. Well, who specifically? Well, you're not going to be able to get that kind of an answer from the president right there in front of him. What, has he got a paper saying, here's the name of the person who said that. Here's the name of the scientist that said that. He's not going to say that. What is relevant is what the president's policies are. They never brought up the word Paris Climate Accord, which is really what they're all talking about. The issue is not climate change. The issue is, how do we respond to potential changes in weather and whether it's a national security threat? That's the question. And that's the question Stahl should have asked. But that's not what Stahl, because she's a dimwit. She's got the intellectual depth of a glass of root beer. And that's all she talks about, talking points. You might as well have conducted the interview with a member of the resistance. You might as well have conducted the interview with Alexandria Cortez Ocasio. Because that's what you got. Interruptions, nonsense, failed intellect. And she goes on to ask dumb question after dumb question, which were politically motivated, clearly. And it was just a waste of everybody's time. As I said, I don't know why Trump goes on these things. I don't know why he does interviews. Why bother? Why bother? You're just going to get that kind of response. She asked him specific questions about what? Global warming. No. As I said, what the question is, Paris Climate Accords. And the proper response is, I'm sorry, but the United States is not going to involve itself with an international agreement which hamstrings its economy. And Trump started to go there. She interrupted him. He started to say, well, look, I don't understand, you know, how destroying our economy. I'm not going to sacrifice all these men. And then she interrupted him. Then she talked about Jamal Khashoggi. You know, he says, well, the United States is looking into constantly. And she didn't have the intellectual depth to understand what Trump was saying. She interviewed him about North Korea, for instance, right? She says, why do you say you love him? Why do you trust him? Well, he says, you understand, it's a public statement. I'm not going to sit here in front of you and say, well, I don't trust the president of North Korea when they're in the middle of negotiations. Bah, 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 bah. He started to stance there. But what about this? And what about that? And blah, blah, blah. Well, that's not act-banging a journalist. That's being an activist, which is what journalists have become. And Donald Trump tried to answer the question, and every time he did, she would argue with him. And then, of course, naturally, his response would have to change. Well, if you're going to talk about that, then I'll talk about this. And then she would change the subject again, constantly changing the subject. Then she went on to talk about Putin. And he says, well, I've been the toughest on Putin. But what about this? Everything was, but you said this, but you said that publicly. Like it makes a difference. It makes no difference anymore whether the president says something publicly, but his policy is different. That's what he was trying to get across during the entire 20 minutes of interview. He's been the toughest U.S. president on the Russian issue, on Vladimir Putin, probably since Reagan. Never went there. Never discussed that. Never discussed policies. Never. And you could see Donald Trump was getting frustrated. The president was being frustrated by Leslie Stahl because he kept trying to bring it back to policy, which is what the interview should have been about. Instead, all Stahl wanted to talk about, but you said on this, and but you said that, like a child. Like a butthurt child having a tantrum right there in front of the cameras. That's all she was doing. It was sad. It was pathetic. It was disgusting. Is that what journalism has become? And you know, we're talking today about civility, right? What about the civility to the United States president? What about respect for the office, damn it? I don't remember an interview by any journalist at any time of any president that was conducted in that manner. I really don't. Hostile, combative, interrupting constantly. They don't want to let him talk. They don't want to let him state his statements. They don't want to let him talk policy. You know why? Because they don't have an issue and because they're activist journalists. This is what's going on in America now. It's not so much fake news. What it is you have journalists which are openly hostile and acting as activists. That's a problem. The protections of free speech and the protections of our Constitution are designed to prevent government interference in journalism. I get that. What we have now are, however, is constitutional protections of a political opposition. That's a problem. That's never what it used to be. Have journalists always been left-wing? Yeah, sure. And journalists should be hostile to them. They should be the critics. They should be, but it should be done on a factual basis. Well, here's the truth, folks. That's why they're protected by the Constitution, to protect the bulwark of democracy, which is consent by the people. But if the information provided by journalists is nothing but talking points, if it's nothing but combative argument, then that is a problem. Then you no longer have democracy by consent. I keep saying this. It's ridiculous. And now we have a situation where we have major news sources like 60 Minutes, which traditionally were journalists that were investigating truth, particularly of corporate crimes, of corporate counterculture, of problems in business, of exposing the truth. They did nothing of the sort. Usually when 60 Minutes does an interview of a president, it's a fluff piece. It really is. They've done that constantly, from Bush to Clinton to Obama to Reagan. It's been, oh, look at the president. Here's the president as a real guy. That's not what happened on this interview. That's probably, maybe that's why Donald Trump agreed to it. Because in the past, 60 Minutes interviews with the president have always been about, let's talk about me, the person, right? I remember when Ronald Reagan did an interview. He showed them the ranch up in Santa Barbara, took her out in the Jeep, you know, rode her around, and would ask him, well, what do you know, about personal issues? Well, why is this painting on your mantle? That kind of thing. And it happened with Obama. It happened with Bush. They were, I mean, 60 Minutes has always been left wing, right? It's always been a source of information that comes from the left. I understand that. But it's always been, when they interviewed a president, it's always been about his personal nature. And it was nothing of the sort. It was a combative argument. Why did you have a rally during Hurricane Michael? I mean, they brought up Hurricane Michael as if Donald Trump was responsible for the weather, right? Why did you have a rally? Well, you know, the rally was up in Pennsylvania, right? And Ohio. It's not down in Florida. I'm going to talk to my constituents. I'm not going to let down the people of Pennsylvania, Ohio, wherever these constituents are. And that's what he said. Don't you understand people are suffering in Florida? Well, sure. But that's the responsibility of FEMA, not the responsibility of the President of the United States, only insofar as him directing FEMA to help out the authorities in Florida. You know, I mean, to say nothing that Hurricane Michael, the communities that were affected by Hurricane Michael, I know it was terrible, and I'm going to say it right here. I say terrible things. But the vast majority of people affected by Hurricane Michael, right, because the subject came up about Michael about global warming, which she, of course, pontificated the leftist talking point that hurricanes are getting worse when they're not. That greatly affected people that were living on the barrier islands in the Gulf of Mexico. If you know anything about the Gulf of Mexico, I've been there. There are a lot of these little communities out in the wetlands. There are wetlands like reefs, swamp, mostly swamp, along the Gulf of Mexico and the borders down there, down near Mississippi, Alabama, and the Florida Panhandle, and they're all swampland. And there's a reason for that, because hurricanes hit them all the time. That's why they're there. That's why they're left there. That's why the cities are built inland, right? But people have been settling into these barrier islands and up this highway along Florida's Panhandle, right on the friggin' ocean. Okay? Now, if people want to do that, that's fine. I mean, I'm going off the topic here, but I got to mention it again. But I'm tired of them saying hurricanes are getting worse because look at all this destruction. Well, look, the reason that all that destruction is happening is because people are building where they shouldn't. Or at least where it's going to have a problematic effect when a hurricane hits. There's a reason why Panama Beach looks the way it does. Have you ever looked at it on a map? There's a reason for that. There are certain communities in certain cities, in certain locations in the United States where hurricanes routinely hit. One of them, the most common place is North Carolina, statistically. You know what the other place is? Florida Panhandle. There's a reason the Gulf of Mexico looks like it does. There's a reason why the coast looks like a jigsaw puzzle. Because hurricanes hit them all the time. Statistically, hurricanes are getting less severe. Nobody talks about that. Nobody got into that discussion with the President of the United States in that discussion. All they did was quote, but scientists say, but scientists say. And he kept saying, but this is our policy. This is the reason why we backed out of the Paris Climate Accords. I'm not prepared to discuss with you whether scientists are right or not. I'm not debating that with you. He kept trying to say that. I'm not debating that with you. I'm telling you what our policy is. That's the only thing that's relevant when you're having a discussion with the President of the United States. Nope. Everybody just argue with the president. That's all the left got anymore. That's why it looks like we're heading into a civil war. Let's talk about that next. Let's take a break. I'm going to talk about all these people screaming and all the stuff going on with celebrities and whatnot. We'll be right back. We're back. Before we go forward, I should mention that I've posted the entire interview of 60 Minutes on our Facebook page. I would encourage you to watch it. As ridiculous as it is, as idiotic as Stahl is, I would encourage you to... I'll be honest with you. I watched all of it, but I would sometimes just walk away from the computer where I watch it because it was just so stupid. And I just watch it. See if you see what I'm saying, all right? And you be the judge. I'll leave it at that. I get a lot of messages from people about what's going on in this place, what's going on in that place. And I get a lot of times I get this comment. Tom, we're headed for a civil war. Are we headed for a civil war? What about the civil war that's coming? Keep your powder dry. Get that a lot, right? Okay. I can understand why people are yelling at each other all the time. But understand this. Be aware of this. You're being played. Most of these stories about the resistance, I post them because they're funny. I really do. I love watching it when the Phoenix police blasts the guy in the balls with a plastic pellet shot. I think it's high comedy when I see purple-haired women banging on the doors of the Supreme Court because it's meaningless. It's ineffective. Most of it is driving people to vote Republican, believe it or not. Karl Rove finally got something right. He was on Fox News Sunday. He says, these nuts are not just protests. They're driving people away from the process itself and driving people to the Republican. That the blue wave was largely sabotaged by the left itself, by the screaming, the yelling, the Antifa protests and whatnot. For some reason, the left believes that's going to be successful. All of these protests, all of these people acting like idiots, in my opinion, imbeciles, all of these comments, both right and left, I might add, the comments on my Facebook page, the comments I get privately, comments on Twitter, right and left, everyone's screaming about, oh, the coming civil war. Let me tell you something. People have been talking that way for 200 years in this country. That's not changed. In fact, if you go back and you look at some of the publications of 1787 to 1887, leading up to the Civil War, you'll find they were just as uncivil, have been just as uncivil after the Civil War. We've been nasty to each other for 200 years and nothing's changed. That's the nature of American political theater. We have been hostile, combative, from the days when people slapped a door across two Cracker Barrels in a saloon to vote. Look, nothing's changed in America. We have always been politically wild and woolly. My God, the entire American Revolution is based on screaming and yelling, right? What's changed is, and what people don't understand, is most of the stuff now is posted in social media, and so you're more aware of it. And it's being used as a weapon to intimidate people. Well, look at all this screaming and yelling. See, this is what the left is constantly selling the American people. See, look at all this screaming and yelling. It shows you that people are outraged. But when you really examine it, when you examine the facts, that you'll find that most of these people are the same people. Most of these people are actually small in number, and they do not reflect the actual people, by and large, that are working and living in America. They are a narrow few people And most of them are portrayed as huge mobs when they're not. When you pan back the cameras, when you examine it, it's only small groups. And small groups are always vocal, right? Even the Tea Party group, they're vocal. And they were a small group relative to the rest of the country. So this idea that the entire country is getting is lining up to fight for is nonsense. It's complete nonsense. People who have food on the table, have jobs, and are successful in any way or any stretch of the imagination, they don't have revolutions. You really want a civil war in this country? Cut off people's food stamps overnight. Cut off people's Medicaid overnight. In other words, tell people you have to fend on your own. You watch how fast. Why do you think 6 million people in this country get food stamps? Why do you think that exists? Well, because social liberals wanted to give out stuff. Well, that's true in some respects. Well, because of Lyndon Johnson. Well, that's true. No, it's designed to keep people quiet. If you didn't have all those people getting in line for food stamps, if you didn't have all these handouts, people would suddenly go hungry. And when people go hungry, that's when they pick up guns and pitchforks. I got news for you. The effect of social services, not that I support a lot of these programs. I have to tell you that. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't. But the effect of them is a settling down of civil insurrections. When people get welfare checks, when people get food stamps, by and large, they're not going to pick up a gun and shoot the people that given it to them. That's the bottom line. I remember when we had the Rodney King riots in Los Angeles. Some people said the Rodney King insurrection or the civil war, whatever, okay? Whole bunch of people got mad because they felt that they didn't get justice when Rodney King got beaten and was shown on cameras and the four cops essentially walked away unscathed, right? There was civil insurrection in Los Angeles for days. It might have went weeks. People getting beaten up in the streets, fires, looting, constant looting. You know when it stopped? When everybody got in line for their checks. The mail, the U.S. mail said, you know what, we can't deliver mail in this environment. No rain, no sleet, no snow. But listen, if somebody picks up a stick and tries to beat us over the head with it, we're not going to deliver the mail. That's when it stopped, when the U.S. mail stopped. You know why? Because I talk about back in the day. It was only, 1992? Back in the day, you used to get your mail, and inside was your welfare check or your food stamp certificates or whatever. That's the way they used to do it. They all do it electronically now with electronic deposits. So I don't know what that means for the future. But back in the day, when those checks stopped, the riot stopped because everybody had to get in line at the Civil Service Department to get their checks. That's when it stopped. And then when people got their check, they just said, you know what? What are we fighting all about? And Rodney King came out and said, oh, can't we all get along? You remember this? And then everyone started to say, you know, maybe we shouldn't. Maybe we shouldn't burn down the city because we're only burning down our own homes. We're only burning down the stores which service our needs. People started to wake up from the ether. That will happen again, too. And you know why? Because people are working. People are getting fed. People who have a Thanksgiving dinner on the table don't pick up the sticks and stones. And I'm constantly told I'm wrong. But show me one example of when people rose up against the government and they were largely well-fed. We're one of the fattest nations in the world. We're doing well. The standard of living in the United States is sky high. Even the poor people in our country are wealthy compared to poverty overseas. We have clean running water, dry roofs, and almost every home, almost every person has access. And those that don't certainly can get access in homeless shelters, food stamps, welfare, housing subsidies, Medicaid. There's been no example of that in human history when that's happened. Do people get upset? Oh, yeah. Do people bang on Supreme Court doors? Certainly. But all of that will go away after the election, whoever wins. It's being ginned up by the media in order to get you to think that it's a problem, or to get you to think that we got a situation. The Antifa is being prodded, being paid to go out and agitate things so that you think maybe voting Democrat's the solution. Oh, yeah, the rest of the world feels this way. Maybe I should be. It's called the Milgram effect. Milgram did an experiment. I think it was back in the 50s. He took a classroom of people, right? 30, 40 people. And he drew three lines on the board. And one of them was significantly shorter than the other two lines. Then he said to the classroom, how many people think all three lines are the same length? Now, what people don't know is that 33 out of the 34 students were plants, or were paid to say that they were all the same. So what happened is that the 33 people who were paid to say all raised their hand. You'd be shocked to know that the vast majority of the 35th person who was the test subject raised their hand as well. Oh, yeah, I guess they're all the same because I'm the only one. I don't want to be the only one out, the odd man out. People see what the media does and the leftists do is they gin this thing up, pay the Antifa supporters, pay the Occupy Wall Street, pay the, whatever group it is to do all this stuff. And then they get other people who are like that, who are crazy like that, to go with them, right? Which is not a large group. And then they show it on the news like it's a big thing. Oh, what's going on in this situation in Portland? Yeah, don't get me wrong. It is horrible what's going on in Portland, the Antifa blocking streets and whatever. But all of it will go away after the election because the purpose will be served to encourage people to vote left-wing. Many left-wing pundits who are in on the scam, who go on these shows, like Fox News Sunday, I forget who the guy's name was. He was a Clinton advisor, which immediately said, lies coming, right? When they say they work for Hillary Clinton, lies coming. Says, oh, no, this is important, and you need to understand that America doesn't like Donald Trump, and America doesn't like the policies, the racist, misogynist policies of the right wing, and these people are rising up. These are legitimate protests. Horseshit. They're paid agitators to get you to think that so that it encourages you to vote. Well, I need to vote because everybody else is going to vote against Trump. Except the American people are smarter than that. That's why 1,000 seats went to the Republican Party over the last 8 years. That's the truth of it. The vast majority of Americans are relatively conservative, are relatively right-wing. They tend to be a little bit more socially liberal, but tend to be very economically conservative. And most people see through this. Most people get offended by people screaming and yelling. Most people laugh at the people, at the fatties that are being paid to hold up ridiculous signs. That's what the left doesn't get. That's what you don't get. If you think this is a legitimate movement towards civil war, you're out of your mind. If you think that a bunch of beta males who are unarmed, wearing black hoodies, are a threat to anyone, you're out of your mind. Every time this has come to violence, and it will, I'm not saying that it won't come to some level of violence. Every time it has, they get their ass handed to them, both by police and by people who are out there waving the American flag who are just as bad, who walk around. I mean, I saw a guy hit an Antifa supporter over the head with the American flag on a pole. That's so ridiculous. That's so over the top. It's laughable. That's why I showed it on Facebook. But make no mistake, that's not the vast majority of Americans. The vast majority of Americans go to their job, come home, feed their kids, kiss their wife, and go to bed. And they're not going to pick up a gun anytime soon. Now, what would actually drive us to a real civil war? Well, it usually takes federal intervention. In the case of the American Civil War in 1864, there were legitimate arguments that the American people had against the federal government, and the federal government took action. The federal government started seizing land, seizing armories, and seizing National Guard stations. Nothing like that is happening. That's when people pick up arms. When people start marching into their streets with guns by the federal government, that's when it happens. Not when a purple-haired girl is banging on a Supreme Court door because she's got a lysine deficiency, okay? It's just not going to happen, not anytime soon. What typically happens in this kind of a situation is that wars are fought with lawyers. The Mueller investigation has gone nowhere. The left has nothing to offer in the fall. They have no argument. There are some in the left that believe that socialism is the answer. They're trying to sell it to the American people, and the people aren't buying, so they're ginning up all these protests. getting people out, getting the vote out. And Hillary Clinton's the worst of them. It's hard to be uncivil. It's hard to be civil with people trying to destroy everything you believe in. Yeah, what do you believe in? That's the problem, Hillary. What do you believe in? Socialism? The idea that government should provide everything and tell everyone what to do? Are you kidding me? Nobody's buying that. Nobody. That's why you lost. That's why Trump said, that's why you lost. Nobody's buying what the Democrats are selling. What are they selling? What are they coming to the American people and saying, this is why you should vote? Well, because Trump's a bad guy? Because Trump's an asshole? Because this person said mean things to me? Kristen Sinema is running on what platform here in Arizona as a senator? What is she running for? What does she stand for? I stand for civility. I stand for this. You know why I should be senator? Because Martha McSally was mean to me. That's what she's saying. I'm publicly. Martha McSally's running a terrible campaign. She's saying all these negative things. What? That you voted for child molesters? That you support it? Those are facts. That's on the record. That's your voting record. How is that such a terrible thing? The American people are smarter than that. And so they're out of ideas. They're out of narrative. They don't know what to do. That's why they're screaming and yelling. It's not that they're mad at Trump. They're mad at themselves. They have no argument to make. And those kind of things don't result in a real civil war. That is a situation that only, as I said, only happens when you get armed intervention in cities. And believe me, they're paid protesters. They take a shot to the balls with a plastic pellet gun, they go home. They collect their $12 an hour that they were paid by whatever group that's paying them, and they go home. What this happened, you know, people forget. This happened during the last, I don't know how many elections, the last two or three. Remember when it was called Occupy Wall Street, and they were occupying the streets, and people said, oh, it's going to be another civil war. What happened? Winter came. They went home. They got a little cold, and so they went home. And New York was forced to clean up the mess they left. And everybody saw it for what it is. What happened in the last election? There were all kinds of protests. You remember rocks being thrown through Republican windows? Not to say that they aren't dangerous when they do that, but it's not going to be a civil war. Because what happens in the end? They go home after the election. They're not real paid. They're not real revolutionaries. They're a little different. Real revolutionaries organize on their own with weapons. Real revolutionaries don't go home after the election. They ramp things up. They start to fight. They start to shoot at people. That doesn't happen. So I just put this idea of civil war out of your head. Are people less civil to each other? No. Is it proper to say, well, we all need to put our arguments away and really start to talk things out? Yes. It is appropriate because we have to stop dehumanizing the enemy. The enemy is not evil. They're not out to destroy America. Their idea of America is just something different. It's more of a European culture, one of which I stand steadfastly opposed to. I don't think they're evil. I just think they're stupid. Most of them can't do math. I mean, you look at Alexandria Cortez. What is she selling? A program that essentially would cost the American people $40 trillion? My God, we're only $20 trillion. We're $20 trillion in debt. The American economy only could possibly generate $2 or $3 trillion a year. Where's that $40 trillion going to come from? Oh, the rich. Well, that's not an answer because she's stupid. Poorly educated, I should say. Let's talk about the celebrities next because they're a big part of the problem too. We'll be right back. Gifts of all sizes help to ensure that Liberty Never Sleeps remains a relevant, vital resource across our nation. More than 70% of the funding for Liberty Never Sleeps comes from our listeners through the generosity of membership support by donating at patreon.com. Join our Insiders Club for $10 a month and gain access to private shows and editorial columns. Go to libertyneversleeps.com and click on the Donate Now button at the top of the page or on the button at our Facebook site. Thank you for your continued support. Do I stay or run away and leave it all behind? We're back. I'm tired of watching these celebrities hack and complain. I'm tired of Rosie O'Donnell bitching and moaning. What has Kathy Griffin said lately? Fuck, 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 fuck. Dropping F-bombs every few seconds, right? They don't have anything to offer the American people. They don't have anything real to offer. I can run off the list of celebrities. Alyssa Milano, Tom Arnold, Morgan Freeman. What are they all proposing? Rob Reiner. What are they proposing? Get rid of Trump. He's not even up for election. Well, we're going to impeach Kavanaugh. Well, what is the reason for that? When somebody says to me, we want to impeach Donald Trump, we want to impeach Brett Kavanaugh, why? Well, I don't agree with who they are. That's not a reason for impeachment. Most of the people in Congress are cooler heads. They're quietly, the Democrats are being quiet about this Antifa protest. But usually after an election, they immediately, whether they win or lose, they immediately go, oh, well, I just divest myself of that. Even Bernie Sanders said, well, I don't think that's such a good idea. He said it just the other day. I don't think that's such a good idea to do that. That's why we have a republic. That's what the founding fathers envisioned. They envisioned people in Congress saying, oh, I don't think that's a good idea. Cooler, wiser heads. Mass democracy is a bad idea. But the celebrities, they don't do that. Celebrities, by and large, actors, actresses, aren't very bright. That's why they went into it in the first place. They couldn't do anything else, right? So they get up in front of a camera and they say things based on what? On their knowledge. And what is their knowledge based on? It's movie scripts, television scripts. They don't have and this is not a matter of intelligence. This is a matter of they just don't have the time and experience and knowledge and education to provide any kind of real political insight, any complete understanding of civics and how our country works. So they basically stand up and say, I'm mad because I lost. So should you be. And the problem is the vast majority of people that follow these celebrities, and I include with that James Woods, right-wing celebrities that are fewer and far between, Nick Searcy's one. I mean, you have to understand most of these actors and actresses don't have the time and expertise and knowledge of civics. Now, that doesn't mean they shouldn't do it. It's up to them. But you should understand this, that they don't represent any kind of a realistic view of how America works, generally. They're generally posting tweets, messages, and social media because why? They're unhappy with the way things are. And they're no more important or more knowledgeable than the average guy in the street. Period. End of story. There are some that have the money to make an influence in society. People like George Clooney. They have raised money. They're very good at fundraising. And that's what it really is all about. The reason that the Democrats court celebrities is because their ability to raise money. Because if so-and-so has a party, right, and says, well, I would like you to come. I'd like that. Oh, God, so-and-so wants me to come? Oh, I would love to go to a party with Johnny Carson. You know, that kind of thing. I would love to go to Hobnob and rub elbows with Deborah Messing or Rosie O'Donnell or any of these other liberals. I would love, you know, even me, a conservative, I'd love to sit in a party with these guys. I'd love to debate one. But you understand that they're very capable because of that, because of their fame, because of their position in society, which is aggrandized fame and celebrity, that they're able to raise money. That's why the Democrats think so highly of. That's why social media, Google, Facebook, Twitter, that's why they get promoted and they're at the top of all the Twitter feeds. Because their ability to raise money, not because they have anything of any value to offer, not because they have any insights, and some do. Some are a little bit more intelligent than others, and some make good points. And this is on the right and the left as well. But the big reason why the left-wing celebrities are promoted by most of the social media, by media, there's a reason why Dianne Feinstein had Alyssa Milano in the Kavanaugh hearings. It's not because Alyssa Milano offers anything of real intellect or any value. It's because Alyssa Milano can bring a lot of money to the table, can get some Dianne Feinstein reelected, because as we all know, money elects politicians, generally. Not always. Donald Trump seems to be a notable exception. That's why it's all about. That's why this celebrity culture exists, because of money. Nobody gives a rat's ass about celebrities' thoughts. Nobody gives a rat's ass whether Rosie O'Donnell makes a salient point. Nobody cares if Alyssa Milano talks about culture or that's irrelevant. And it's not that they even have a lot of votes. The vast majority of people that follow celebrities are of the millennial generation, right? The 18 to 30 crowd. But the 18 to 30 crowd typically does not vote. They're very good at registering to vote, right? Oh, they're really good at that. They're real good at signing up to register to vote. But the vast majority of them don't vote statistically. When you look back in previous presidential elections, especially in previous midterms, they don't vote. Too busy going to the beach. Too busy with their own lives, because they tend to be, as most young people, this is not a right or left thing, most young people tend to be self-absorbed. I know I was. I know at 22, I wasn't as involved in politics as I am today. Nor did I have the understanding and intellectual depth that I did at 22. So by and large, I was more interested in getting laid at 22, right? I was more interested in what was going on with the girls across the hallway from me than I was with what Ronald Reagan's policies were. Oh, yeah, I supported Reagan. I was always a conservative. I was a conservative as early as I can remember, okay? Because I'm not a joiner. That's the main reason. I don't believe in government has a right to tell anybody to do anything. But, you know, I'm an extremist. But the vast majority of 18 to 30-year-olds are more interested in their own lives, as they should be. Let's be honest. Somebody who's 18 to 30 in that range, you should be more interested in what? Finding, selecting a mate for life, whoever that might be, getting a proper education, and figuring out what you're going to do with your life. And most people who are under the age of, I would say, 25, don't even know who they are. Don't even know what they want to be. Don't even know what they're going to be, what they want to do. There seems to be a move towards social activism because of social media. There seems to be more of an interest in being famous than there is in being wealthy, but that's always been the case. People have always wanted to be more popular than to be more powerful or wealthy or whatnot. They were more interested in getting along and having lots of friends and having great friends or whatever. Most people are shallow like that at that age. People grow up, though. As people become business owners, people become more wealthy, more educated, more experienced, wisdom, a couple of gray hairs in your head, you tend to get more conservative. The world changes all the time, but celebrity culture doesn't. And it's always about the same thing, money, the ability to raise money. If a famous person, if a wealthy person, if George Clooney picks up a phone, he can have 200 or 300 people who have a lot of money at a celebrity, at a gathering, and say, I think that this person should be elected. Won't you help? And when you have $100 million in the bank, when you're making pictures, when you're making TV shows at $500,000 an episode a week, yeah, you could probably afford to put 10 grand if you think your friend has a point about this senator or that representative or that president. But please, don't mistake the ability to generate a lot of followers on Twitter as political clout. That's not what it's all about. What's all about is what's happening to intimidate or encourage you to vote in a certain way. Spending money on ads. George Clooney can raise a whole lot of money for somebody and then he can take that money and devote it into ads. And believe me, negative ads, positive ads, whatever, advertising works. A TV ad, radio ads, when you're bombarded, that's why you're bombarded with these votes. That's why there's so much money out there. That's why fundraising is so important. Because it works. Marketing works. Selling it. I got a few last words before we close out the show. I saw a movie over the weekend. Last Man. And I got a few words to say on that. Before we go to that, I just want to emphasize, is it possible for the United States to be driven into civil war over political issues? Yeah, it's possible. Anything's possible. Is it likely? No. No. Most people have something that they want to protect. Wife, family, job, home, career, etc. When you have those things, that's when you don't fight civil wars. That's when you fight an in-civil war with lawyers, with paperwork. That's what the left is doing against Donald Trump. It's an incivil war, a coup, some people call it. I call it an incivil war. The Mueller investigation went nowhere. Let's face it. That's why it's on hiatus. That's why they're not producing a report before the election. That's why Mueller isn't coming forward with any kind of real arrests in the case, because there's nothing there. Never was. All amounted to nothing. They just put it on hiatus for right now. That's why the Russian, that's why all these protests are now going on, because the Russian narrative went nowhere. And the Democrats have nothing to offer. The incivil war. Let's be nasty to each other. Let's call people each other names. That's what you do when you're frustrated, when you're losing. So don't think that that's going to result in any kind of real social change. What it's done, as I said, to intimidate you or encourage you to think that other people are thinking that way. Oh, let's get rid of Trump. He's the problem. This would have happened if Bush was president, folks. It's not about Trump. Trump just makes it easy because the guy just shoots at the hip, whatever he says, and that makes it easy. He's not a guy who stands up and says the politically correct thing. That's what we wanted as a president, right? You remember how many movies we all went to see where the American president, things like that, would suddenly talk plainly to the American people and everybody loved him? Well, the reality is when an American president talks plainly, everybody hates him. Nobody likes the truth. Everybody says they like the truth, but nobody likes it. Nobody wants to hear the truth. That's why I want to talk about this movie, First Man. We'll be right back.
Oh, the times, they are a-changin'. The mothers and fathers throughout the land, and don't criticize what
you... Okay, only got a few minutes left. I saw a movie over the weekend. A movie about Neil Armstrong. A movie called First Man. It was an in-depth character study of Neil Armstrong. It was not a movie about the moon landing, despite what you think. Even despite the way that the thing is being marketed. Neil Armstrong, as an individual, was a very flawed individual. Even his family admits that. He was an engineer. He was essentially a pencil pusher. It was one of the reasons why he left the NASA X-15 program. There's all kinds of reasons why. Bottom line is, the guy was not what they were looking for. Was not a gung-ho test pilot, so to speak. A Chuck Yeager type, a Gus Grissom type. And the reason I mention those names, they're in the movie, the characters. And they're portrayed as kind of negative troublemakers. That's the way they were. Test pilots were extremely difficult to work with. The president, Eisenhower, wanted test pilots for the NASA program. That's why they were the initial astronauts in the Mercury program, the Gemini program. I could think of a couple other programs. But that was the initial batch. Alan Shepard, John Glenn. These were all professional pilots. But they were very difficult to work with because pilots, by and large, by their nature, are very anti-authoritarian, very independent people, very independent-minded. NASA is an engineering program. The first man on the moon, the trip to the moon, is a feat of engineering, not a feat of aviation. The movie demonstrated that there was a lot of engineering that was involved. The astronauts themselves leaned toward an engineering background, right? They showed them doing extensive studies into the study of the machinery, the equipment. The movie did a great job showing the utter primitiveness of early space flight. I don't think people recognize that. These were literally guys that were shoved in a tin can. And they were shot. They were hurled off the earth toward a target. Very difficult proposition. It's still a difficult proposition, actually, to put a man on the moon. I don't think people realize it. The mathematics and the engineering involved, it's not an easy thing, even today. To put a man on a moon requires an enormous amount of people to accomplish the job. Backup systems, development, computers, the mathematics of the ballistics of it. To hit an object in space that's hurtling. You don't understand. The Earth is hurtling along at thousands of miles an hour. So is the moon. to hit that target precisely at a location? Almost impossible. Virtually impossible. But we did it. And the movie shows that. Shows that Neil Armstrong was an engineer. Showed how difficult the proposition was. How many people, I don't think people realize how many astronauts have been killed in the NASA program, especially in the early days. Showed that the machinery itself was fairly primitive. The Eagle lander was essentially just a wireframe box with a shell. Showed how difficult it was to land on a moon. That the piloting of the machinery was a feat of engineering. And Neil Armstrong himself was a very closed, insulated man. Even after the first landing on the moon, he didn't talk publicly a lot about it. He didn't make a lot of speeches. He didn't seek public acclaim. It was probably one of the things that people didn't understand about him. I did as an engineer. I mean, he is an engineer. The movie showed that. It is not an anti-American film. It shows the flag on the moon, by the way, despite what you've been told. I watched it for, I looked for it. Shows the flag on the moon twice. What it doesn't show is Armstrong and Aldrin. By the way, it was two men. It took two men to unfold the flag because the friggin' pole, because there's no wind on the moon, the friggin' pole didn't work right. It didn't open right. And that's why the flag looks all bundled and crappy up there. It's not because there's any wind up there. It's because they had trouble with the pole. As a matter of fact, I think Aldrin talked about it. If you can find the films, it takes them about 15 minutes to open the flag, right? They didn't show it in the film, but it's not necessary. I would have preferred to do it. The Armstrong family said, how come you didn't show it? I don't think it was an anti-American statement as much as this is something that would have been difficult to film. Watch the real films of them unfolding the flag. It's extremely tedious. As a matter of fact, the NASA film, which is shown on the NASA site, is sped up to like 8 minutes. You can see them moving really fast because it was such a difficult process, and they didn't want to lie about it, right? It's like if you're going to show it on a film, you've only got it. You can't spend 20 minutes of your movie showing them unfold the flag, okay? So I get it. They could have done it better, and they should have. But it's not an anti-American film. What it is an anti-bravado film, an anti-mythical film. It's a deconstruction of the myth that astronauts were these guys of derring do. That these, you know, with the pilot, like the Wright stuff. The Wright stuff is, if you've ever seen this, and the book, Tom Wolfe book, is about the extraordinary derring do of the pilots of the early program. They were. These guys would fly by the seat of their pants. And these were men like that. But Armstrong in the NASA program, the Apollo program, was not that. Because that kind of mentality would get you killed. Now, they showed Armstrong to be a man of exceptional integrity, but they also showed him as a major character flawed person. The Armstrong family has said, well, they were a little tough on Neil in this movie, that he really wasn't as bad as the movie says. Well, that's a matter of artistic license. But the reason I actually talk about it and why I think it's relevant to today's show is that people don't often like the truth about heroes, about what's going on in the world. That's why Trump is so hated. It's not because he's right-wing. It's not because he's conservative. He's hated because he tells people the truth. That he says things plainly. Right? I mean, we were all thinking about, he's coming under a lot of criticism for his comments about Dr. Ford. I don't remember. But that's the truth of it. That's what she said. Nobody likes to hear that. And a scene in the movie, and the reason I bring it up, there's a scene in the movie where Buzz Aldrin talks plainly about some of the astronauts that died and suggests that, and Buzz Aldrin was right, that there may have been some flaws in the pilots themselves who got killed that led to the collision. I'm not arguing whether that actually happened or not, but that was a discussion in the film, and Buzz Aldrin looked around and you could see the looks on the faces of the other astronauts. Like, man, you don't say that when the guy's dead. And Buzz Aldrin said, what? You're all thinking it. I'm just saying it out loud. And Neil Armstrong looks over and says, yeah, maybe you shouldn't. Sometimes people don't really want to know the truth. People don't want to know the truth about the Apollo program, that it was an engineering feat, that it was difficult, that it was a pretty good bet that the astronauts weren't going to come back that was that risky? People have been told, oh, yeah, we can do it. No problem. Man on the moon. Easy. Woo. No. There's a reason why no other country's done it. Even today. It's almost impossible to do. Even today. It's difficult. And if you see the movie, you'll understand why. I don't have time to explain it today. All I can tell you is the ballistics and the math and the engine. That's what makes it a great feat of American know-how. That's why it's so great, because it was so difficult to do. John Kennedy said it himself. We don't do these things because they're easy. We do them because they're hard. Because it makes a statement about America. And that, unfortunately, was said in the movie. It was not an anti-American movie, and I would encourage you to see it. It is a good movie. Rex Reed's review of the movie was dead bang on. He gave it 3 out of 4 stars. Good movie. Had some problems. A little too claustrophobic for his tastes, but it was an accurate portrayal, a factual talk about Neil Armstrong, the man, and the program itself. Out of time today. Hope you enjoyed today's show about incivility. We'll be back tomorrow. Take care, folks. Have a good one.
Did you hear the news? Metro PCS is now Metro by T-Mobile. Now you get new plans with unlimited high-speed data all month long, all on the T-Mobile network. Check out the new Metro by T-Mobile today and discover the smarter way to get unlimited. Metro by T-Mobile. That's genius. During congestion, the fraction of customers using greater than 35 gigs per month may notice reduced speeds. And Metro customers may notice reduced speeds versus some T-Mobile customers. Video streams at 480p. Coverage not available in some areas. See store for details and terms and conditions.